Good morning. This is Evelyn Velez, Chair of the Senior Citizen Engagement Committee. And I wish everybody a happy Valentine's Day and happy post-Super Bowl Day. I hope you all had your jackets out yesterday and enjoyed it.
Oh, Rams.
Desiree, would you please? Let's do the Pledge of Allegiance. Dave Tetzla, if you wouldn't mind leading us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Dave. Elizabeth, would you be so kind as to do the roll call?
All right. Tony Olivetto. I know Tony's here. Tony, you're on mute.
But he's talking away.
Tony, you're on mute.
Oh, there it is. I'm here. Wouldn't come off mute.
Okay. Elizabeth Busick, present. Carol Downey, present. Scott Fagg. Elaine Genoway.
Present.
Sherry Horn.
Here.
Nope, Sherry, you're here. Carolyn Inman.
Here.
Jim Levy.
Present.
Nalita Mendoza.
John. Present. Present.
Nalita, where's
Nalita?
Oh, okay. Present. All right. John Pointer.
Present.
Tony Rodella.
Here.
Dave Tetzloff.
Here.
Evelyn Velez.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth. Well, we are very excited today with our speaker, and I would really appreciate it, Carolyn, if you would make an introduction.
Thank you very much. Patty Mouton is the Vice President for Outreach and Advocacy at Alzheimer's Orange County, where she has been on staff since 2005. In January 2020, Patty also assumed responsibility for the Advanced Care Planning Community Education Program for the Hoag Hospital Palliative Care Department. In the past, she has done a number of things, as you can imagine. She was co-chair of the Orange County Pulse Coalition for Orange County Advanced Care Planning Partners. Chair of Cal Optima One Care Connect Advisory Committee. She is, as we know, on SCAC. She's also chair of the social engagement pillar for Heart to Heart Council of Orange County Strategic Plan for Aging. She holds a BS in Human Services from Springfield College. She has graduate certificates in Fundamentals of Gerontology in Palliative Care Chaplaincy, I hope I'm saying these words right, and she's now about to get a master's degree in gerontology from Cal State Long Beach. That will happen in 2022. And we know her as a woman who is incredibly informed about all of these issues that are so important to us. So we're really happy to have you here today as the speaker.
Thank you so much. I'm hoping I can share my screen. Can we enable that? Can you see it?
Yes, and let me just ask before you begin, Patty, if everybody else would mute until the question and answer, please. And we can see your screen.
Terrific. Well, I'm so pleased to be with my colleagues this morning. I have to make one apology that I do have to exit at about 2 minutes to 10 because we have been granted a Zoom meeting with the brand new director of the California Department of Aging, Susan Damaris, who is actually an old friend and colleague. And so when the director of the Department of Aging says she'll meet you on Zoom, you have to kind of hop too. So when Evelyn asked me to speak and discuss a little bit about elder abuse, it occurred to me that we all know elder abuse occurs. We all know about many of the scams. We hear about it from the Sheriff's Department and Adult Protective Services. I think what we need to know is what can we do to prevent some of these terrible things from happening to the people that we know about and maybe to the people we don't really know about much. Loneliness and isolation is a terrible, terrible feeding ground for elder abuse. When people are lonely, when they feel disconnected from others, they latch on to whomever will pay attention. And it's true of all ages, but we're especially vulnerable as we get older. So I thought what I would do is just outline some of the programs that help to alleviate social isolation that you might not be aware of. Some of them cropped up during COVID, but they are still extant and growing. And I think on Valentine's Day in particular, this is a perfect day to reach out to somebody that you think might be a little bit lonesome, might be grieving the loss of a spouse or a loved one, might just be on their own and would love to hear from people. So take this opportunity today to reach out to one or two people that might be lonely and isolated, and you might be doing a really important service toward preventing them being vulnerable to some sort of abuse or someone taking advantage of them. In Orange County, when we started the Heart to Heart Council of the Strategic Plan for Aging, the social isolation and engagement pillar, we found that prior to COVID, there were over 150 active friendly visitor programs through churches, through community centers, through community-based organizations. Many of those programs had to close down or pivot during COVID, but we're going to highlight some of the programs that emerged during this time to really fill in some of those gaps. Meals on Wheels OC, which is the largest provider of Meals on Wheels programs in Orange County, and they take care of the northern parts and some of the central parts of Orange County. They had a friendly visitor program with people, volunteers going out to visit older adults. But during COVID, it was converted to a friendly caller and wellness check program. Volunteers would sign up to call an older adult each week, develop or maintain a relationship, and just check in, assess how they're doing. And then if there were some red flags, then that could be funneled up so that a social worker could maybe make a wellness check on this person. It was provided at no cost, and the visitors and volunteers are just kind people who wanted to help seniors in their community. They got some training, and that program is still available and viable. And so if you had extra time on your hands, you could participate. You just call Meals on Wheels OC and get organized so that you can take the training and do whatever the background checks that they require for their organization. But sometimes a phone call is all somebody needs just to know that someone's thinking about them and maybe to identify, oh gosh, I can't get out to the store, or I've forgotten how to use my Instacart. Could you help me? Little things like that. I will tell you that one of the best moments of the whole COVID experience for me was a small group of people became aware of a few older adults who fell through the cracks of some of the programs for meal delivery. Either they weren't eligible or they didn't know how to sign up or they needed to wait a few weeks before they were eligible. And we did little DoorDash things, and we did it together, so nobody had a big investment, but we ended up feeding five or six older adults until they could get onto a meal delivery program. And it was really nice. I got the nicest notes back from people saying, you know, I really enjoyed that dinner from Mimi's and it was easy to do. So extend yourself just a little bit. The Council on Aging historically has had excellent friendly visitor programs. And they are countywide, highly evolved programs. They screen and train volunteers and interns. They would support older adults conducting weekly in-home visitations and telephone calls. And of course, during COVID, that had to switch to phone calls and maybe some Zoom calls if the older adult had that tech capability. But phone calls definitely were switched into their friendly visitor program. And before too long, this will come back to in-person visitation. This program was offered in many different languages. And sometimes we forget, older adults, especially those that are struggling with cognitive difficulties, even if they learned English well as a second language, if they start to suffer from diseases like Alzheimer's, they frequently will revert to only being able to speak and understand their native language. So we have to be particularly acutely aware of what people's needs are and how their needs change. So these are the kinds of eligibility that somebody would need to fit into to be part of this friendly visitor program from the Council on Aging. Older adult or disabled adult over 18, limited social support, homebound, frail, medically vulnerable, and willingness to participate, wanting to have that kind of contact. Then the Council on Aging also has a Reconnect program. And this is for people who not only have an isolation and loneliness issue, but they're also experiencing perhaps some mental health, physical health, or emotional challenges appearing later in life. And so this particular program has volunteers and staff that are a little more acutely trained, and it provides intervention services. So it's a little more in depth, it's a little more of a social work clinical focus, but it can be a real lifeline for people that are having some emotional difficulties, maybe a little bit of mental health issues or depression, along with some physical clinical health issues. So these are the kinds of services that they provide. They screen people for depression. They have in-home clinical case management with licensed staff. They can do a psychiatric assessment with a clinical professional. They can do counseling. They can link people to resources. So many times, people breathe this huge sigh of relief if they just get a phone number for something that they need. They know that maybe some of these services have to be available, but they don't know how to get there. And sometimes just sending them to 211 isn't enough. It's a little bit of a maze and they're not even sure what to ask for. So if we just help make little bridges for people, we can then alleviate a great deal of their suffering. The Reconnect program is connected to Preventative Mental Health Department. And again, their services are offered in many of the threshold languages for the diverse Orange County community. And they create individual service plans like a care plan. So these programs are so valuable. And I would venture to say that not all of us know that they exist. Then St. Jude Senior Services, pardon me, also has a Caring Neighbors Friendly Visitor Program. And prior to COVID, it was very robustly in person, especially for lower income seniors to increase their socialization, to reduce the effects of loneliness and isolation. And you may know this, but for those of you who don't, loneliness has a significantly negative health impact. It is equivalent to smoking 20 cigarettes a day. in terms of the overall negative impact it has on your blood pressure, on your coronary health, your mental health. So this is a real clinical issue to help combat loneliness and isolation for people's overall health and well-being. But also, if they feel connected, they're not going to be so vulnerable to somebody who's promising something that is unreasonable, or who is trying to ingratiate themselves into their goodwill so that they can take advantage of them financially or emotionally. So there's a lot of important safeguards that come about as a result of reducing people's loneliness. The Cheer a Senior telephone and errand support that cropped up during COVID was really innovative. This also was a program of St. Jude Senior Services that is housed up at St. Jude with the Caregiver Resource Center up off of Bastincherry. And the purpose of the program was to increase safety and reduce loneliness and isolation, and to help people with basic errands that maybe they were having a hard time doing, like getting groceries or their medication pickup. So these students and volunteers would contact two or three seniors every week, make weekly phone calls. They would spotlight activities that they could do with them either by phone or bring something to them if it was safe. And they kept track. So if they were assessed, say with the PHQ-9, which is a depression survey, if one of the social workers provided that assessment, then that was cataloged. Maybe they needed to have an advance directive completed so they could be helped to do that. Maybe they were encouraged to do chair exercises with their volunteer over the phone or by Zoom if they could. Maybe they just needed a little help getting started on their tablet or their computer. So a variety of different services were performed by these student interns and volunteers. And I love this. I used to tell sales reps that I trained, if you were calling to make an appointment, smile and dial, because the smile comes through in your voice. If you really are interested in the person that you're calling to help alleviate their difficulties, then smile before you pick up the phone, and they will hear it in your voice and spirit, and it becomes contagious. We had to teach people to speak more slowly, to enunciate better, to avoid colloquialisms and slang that might not be familiar to the older adult. And sometimes you have to say things more than once. If somebody has a hearing problem or they have a little cognitive disability, if you repeat what you've said exactly the same way, then it gives the brain time to actually catch the information. Another thing that has become really important, and this helps us across the board, but if you're talking to somebody on the phone that maybe has a hearing problem, or maybe has a concentration problem, or could be a variety of things, if you're really wanting to zero in on that phone conversation, ask them to turn off the TV. Ask them to close a window if there's noise outside. And make sure that your own environment on this side of the equation is also free of any background noise, maybe extra music or anything like that, because that can interfere with people's ability to hear well on the telephone. And for those of us who don't have hearing problems, we might not think about it. We're talking in our cars and there's trains outside and traffic and sirens and whatnot. But for somebody who has trouble hearing, and maybe the device that they're using is not as comfortable as their old-fashioned Bell telephone, then, maybe we have to be a little bit more intentional about how we communicate. And then a smaller program that I think is just filled with so much heart is called Project Life. It's a faith-based program run by a private individual, and he does a lot of work with Cal State Fullerton student interns. And before COVID, he had a unique format where the student interns would meet for 10 weeks for an hour each time with the older adult and go through kind of a prescribed conversation and life review and sharing of memories and specific topics that they would talk about. They had to morph this into telephone support during COVID, but it has remained very robust and will go back to in-person once the COVID clear lights are on. And then the UCI MIND, the Memory Impairment and Neurological Disorders Institute, their ASSIST program came up during COVID for socially isolated seniors. This was telephone support using medical students and nursing students who were trained and then ready to participate, doing regular check-in phone calls with older adults to help them connect to community resources, to just chat and not feel so isolated, and somebody that they could talk to who had a little bit of clinical background, who maybe then could connect them to clinical staff if it sounded like what they were describing needed medical attention sooner than later. So this also was a very successful outreach program to help to combat the social isolation that was so heavy during COVID. And what we have learned is when COVID goes away, we have to continue to step up these programs to connect with people, to get them out of their shell, to make sure that they're not isolated and experiencing loneliness that we could mitigate somehow, and to help protect them from the dangers and vulnerabilities that isolation can bring with respect to scam artists and people that would take advantage of them. So that is my bit of information to share with you this morning. And I can share these slides with Evelyn if you like, so that you have the telephone numbers and websites. And I have just a couple of minutes if you have a question or two.
That was an excellent presentation, Patty. Wow, thank you so much. Yes,
my pleasure.
Love to have the slideshow. Who would like to go first with questions? I just want to say how thankful I am, not only for the information, but just to find out that there are second language programs out there, because you're absolutely right. A lot of people just, they speak English when they're working, and then they're not working. And then 20, 30 years, their primary language comes back to be their first language. So right, it's great to know that they have a couple of programs for that.
Absolutely. Very well. Well, thank you very much for the invitation to address all of you this morning. It's a pleasure. I hope you all have a wonderful Valentine's Day, however you celebrate it. I do think this is one of my favorite days of the year because it allows us to just say to people, you know what? I care about you. So have a wonderful day, everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Patty.
Bye.
Bye. Good luck on your meeting.
Thank you.
Carolyn, thank you so much for arranging that. That was a terrific presentation by Patty. We miss her on the committee.
Yes, some of Dave and the rest of us that are on the ad hoc, we're on the ad hoc technology committee. We dealt a lot with loneliness in terms of doing that proposal. And that was when I learned that it was equivalent to 20 cigarettes a day. And then they made other analogies, which I knew it was important, but she really nailed it in terms of letting us know the importance and what we can do about it. So thank you. I'm glad she came.
Yeah, I'm actually stunned about that 20 cigarettes a day. That's huge. Huge. Okay, we will start on then with the chair items. Old business, I want to review the presentation schedule because I had some thoughts and I had some questions. Okay, so Jim has confirmed somebody from the Ombudsman program for our March meeting, and Jean obtained for April Sergeant Vogel from the sheriff's office to talk to us about fraud, another very high priority issue. The one I'm really kind of wondering about is we had tentatively set up Social Security in May. Is Tony here? Yes. And I was just wondering, does he have information for us on elder abuse that would be helpful? Because our two kind of focuses are elder abuse and closing the digital divide. And I'm just wondering if maybe we can find somebody who's a little bit more relevant to our topic.
Would he be able to speak on Social Security fraud? Is it Tony Rodella or Tony Alavado who's arranging that?
It is Tony Rodella.
Okay, Tony, is Jeffrey your speaker?
Well, I've been playing phone tag with him. I haven't been able to contact him. He has, I've emailed him through that email that we have, but I've yet to get contact with him. I've left messages. Okay. I've sent emails and I haven't reached them.
Okay. Yeah. Usually I found who responds to emails, but if you're trying to tie it to elder abuse, maybe on Social Security fraud would be something specifically to ask him for.
Okay. I will do that.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Tony. We don't have anybody for July. And how about if we try to find somebody from the C4A? To talk to us on elder abuse. Anybody have any contacts there?
John Poynter should have a contact with C4A.
Okay, he said.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
You're welcome anytime.
Yes, I have contacts with C4A. I will speak to the president of the executive committee of C4A, and I've got a Zoom meeting with her tomorrow. So let me touch base with her and see if she has any recommendations.
Oh, thank you so much. That would be for July 18th, John.
Duly noted.
Okay, thank you. And then we do have the Orange County District Attorney's Office in August. And I was thinking about for the digital divide, we kind of have a link with the Orange County Public Library System. And I was thinking maybe we could have a conversation with a person from there who is, oh, why do I have John Poynter there? Sorry. That's different. Maybe we can find somebody from the library system who could talk to us about how they help seniors with internet access and what programs they offer and stuff like that. Any ideas there?
I don't, but I have a question. I know things have changed. Are we trying to link these ideas to possible legislation or just become more aware of, because I've heard elder abuse an awful lot of times, and although you get a little bit something new when you hear another speaker on it, I don't know if it's a lot, if it's enough or whatever, but mostly, are we still connecting with legislation?
Yes, we are. And also we're connecting with Orange County Board of Supervisors. So the question that I want to ask our speakers is, what would make your job easier? What would make it better what would make your task or your mission more effective? What could the county, the Board of Supervisors, or the state through legislation do that will improve senior services in your target?
because I find it interesting to hear from legislators themselves if they have time to come. It's hard because in Monday they're usually, you know, say in Sacramento or something, but there are times when they're not in session.
Yeah. And we had planned on Lou Carella and Bartlett and somebody else, but there's a whole lot of, this was an election year. And so we kind of thought maybe that wouldn't work out this year. Go ahead, Jim. You're muted.
I did volunteer to get someone from Lou Correa's office who would come and speak to us on the senior issues that are being taken care of or brought up in Congress. But I didn't have the particular month that you wanted me to set this up in.
Oh, if you think that you can get them, that would be September 19th.
September 19th.
Yes. I thought we were concerned that he was up for re-election.
He is. That doesn't mean he won't speak to us.
All right.
That's another reason for him to speak to us.
Okay.
Well, he himself, someone from his office, he may not personally be here, but someone from his office certainly will.
Okay. Jim, would you then, you'll also coordinate?
Yes.
Thank you very much. You're being very helpful. Okay, great. Okay, thank you for that. The next item on our old business is an update on the status of senior centers. Does anybody have an update that they would like to share? Any programs that are going on? Yes, Tony.
I've been in contact with Maureen Richardson from the Anaheim. She's the director for senior programs in the Anaheim City. And she's told me, you know, like I said, we've discussed this before, but the senior centers are open, functioning pretty well, so there's no problem as far as Anaheim is concerned. Emergencies and people getting COVID because of in-person meetings. So far as she knows, everything's okay.
Okay. Yes, I think mine definitely are also going ahead. I just want to keep it on the agenda because remember, part of what we want to do is also hear from them about what issues they're having, what assistance they would need from the county for their programs. I know we've already had our annual meeting, but it's still important to have the two-way conversation with them of how can we help you. New business, follow up on the annual SCAC workshop. I just wanted to ask everybody how that went for you. Anybody?
I think it was the best one yet, although I haven't been to all of them. But the breakouts, it seemed like everybody was really enthusiastic about ideas. And when we got back together, I think we generated more ideas and more enthusiasm than I've seen for a long time. I thought it went really well.
I'll agree with you on that one. Ours was very active too. The only thing was that there were too many topics for such a short period of time. We kind of had to hurry through some things, but I thought the workshop was great. It was really well organized and good discussion. I just didn't know if anybody had any topics they wanted to follow up with as a result of their small group discussions.
I will tell you though, when Erica and I are meeting on Wednesday morning to kind of put all this together, what was presented. So if anyone has any follow-up information they want to be sure to share us, go ahead and email it to myself and Erica. by Tuesday night. So we have it for Wednesday morning. But I thought it was good. It went fast and there were a lot of topics, but that's also with the understanding that not every group is going to be, you know, have a lot of information on all the topics. So it gave everyone an opportunity to speak to where their interests or strengths lie. Mm-hmm. But thank you all. I thought it was, we got a lot of good input.
Okay, the second piece of new business is our March special meeting date. And I know that Desiree sent me a timeline, but our SCAC meeting is March 11th. Desiree, will we be able to piggyback onto March 11th? 2, 3, 4, or do we run out of days? I think that's the 25th day.
Right. That should be good if you want to do that.
Okay. So that meeting starts at 9:30. So maybe we could do ours at 9:20 or so. Is that okay, Elaine? Is that a distraction? All right. How does that?
No, that's fine. Only the people who are sitting there having their cup of coffee will just get to listen to your meeting.
Yeah, so
that's fine. I think it's more convenient for everyone to do it that way.
Okay, great. So, any concerns about that? Not. I'm going to recommend that for our March special meeting. Then would be March 11th, and may we have a roll call on that, please? Or can I just ask for ayes on this one, and then on the action item, I have to do the roll call?
I think you can just do a motion, because it is a part of the agenda. You can do the ayes, or if you'd like to do the roll call.
Okay. All right, let's do ayes. So everybody, I'm making the motion that we have our next special meeting on March 11th. May I have a second?
Second.
Jim Levy is the second. And
What time would that start?
It started at 9:20.
9:20. Okay, thank you.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. All against? No? Great. Thank you. So then that passes. Okay. Item number 7, action item, AB 361, review and make findings required by Government Code subsection 54953E3. A recommendation is that we continue virtual meetings due to the proclaimed state of emergency arising from COVID-19. Meetings in person present imminent risk to the health and safety of attendees, and the emergency continues to directly impact the ability of members to meet safely in person. Do I hear a motion that we continue to have virtual meetings?
Dave Tetzla, approve.
Dave Tetzla makes the nomination. A second? Elizabeth? Yes, Elizabeth is a second. Okay. Desiree, would you please do a roll call on that?
Of course. Tony Olivato?
Approve.
Elizabeth Busick?
Yes.
Carol Downey?
Aye.
Scott Feig? Elaine Genoway?
Aye.
Sherry Horn?
Sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't get a response. Was that a yes?
Aye.
Oh, okay. Carolyn Inman?
Aye.
Jim Levy?
Aye.
Nalita Mendoza? John Poynter?
Aye.
Tony Rodella?
Aye.
Dave Tetzlaff?
Aye.
Evelyn Velez?
Aye.
And that is a majority, Chair.
Great, thank you. We will continue with our virtual meetings. Item number 8, subcommittee reports. Let's talk about the digital divide subcommittee. Dave and Tony and Carolyn, do you have anything you want to share with us? You can start with maybe the workshop that we had.
A couple things. Tony and I had a chance to get together face to face for coffee the other day, and just trying to go over developing an agenda for the future in regards to what the committee can be doing, checking on the iPad, see how the program is developing, see if there's been some challenges, etc. Is it possible to establish to do another survey just with the iPad recipients and finding out what the kind of challenges they had? The second item is I had an opportunity to give a written report to the OC SPA and Digital Divide Committee, and just updating them, informing. They asked me in regards to the survey, if there was any follow-up on that survey that we originally did, and I reported that Evelyn had given them a report that the committee did an evaluation, submitted a report to the executive board with recommendations to the board of supervisors that was approved. And that's in reference to the iPads and the get set up. So they're up to date. The challenge that they are facing right now is that they are looking for a chair for the committee. And so things are slow on their process, but I continue to follow with them and will be joining in some of their Zoom meetings in the future, updating them in regards to what our committee is doing, what SCAC is doing in general with the digital divide, and just keeping everybody else informed on our side in regards to what OC SPA is doing. Tony, Carolyn, any additional comments?
Yeah, I have a couple of things. One, I'm not sure how many of the iPads from the former, from District 5, remain undistributed. I'm assuming that's the only one of the five districts that hasn't distributed them all, because I had changed some emails with Erica, because I wanted to find out about the usage. She said we'd have to get that from Verizon, and the county IT staff could, liaison with Verizon about that, but we really couldn't do that till all of them were distributed. So again, I don't know how many. It was 300 and some the last time, the last number I saw. Does anybody have a better number on that?
They reported on it at the last SCAC. I don't think they gave an actual number, but I think they indicated that it was less than the time before. And also that with new districts, they were expanding out into areas that five hadn't been before to see if there were people there that would like.
Yeah, Costa Mesa now is part of five, and that might be a good place to distribute them.
Could you please tell me what's SPA? SPA, what does that stand for? Isn't that who you said you met with, David? Dave?
Yeah, that's coordinated by the Alzheimer's Association of OC. And
yeah, SPA stands for Strategic Plan on
Aging.
Right.
Okay.
So the OC SPA has developed, I'm not sure how many subcommittees that have been meeting on a regular basis. And one of them was the digital divide, which we've been loosely associated with since its inception.
Okay, terrific. Well, thank you. I would also like to see if there are any collaborations with the library system, because they are a major hub for desktop computers. And so maybe if that's something the committee would like to consider.
The committee can look at that, most definitely.
Thank you for your.
The library system has, in many of the branches, kiosks inside the libraries where you can check out a laptop to use inside the library. And then also during COVID, they got a lot of hotspots that you could check out and take home. So if you did not have internet connectivity, you could check out a hotspot and take it home and check it out like a book, basically.
Okay. I wonder how well known that is. And the other thing would be, is there, maybe we could use them, their contacts, in order to get some information that would actually help facilitate our goals.
Well, I used to be, up until just about a month ago, I was the chair of the Library Advisory Board. Mm-hmm. So the Library Advisory Board members did communicate this to the cities that were part of the Orange County Library System. And there were announcements and flyers and things like that that went out regarding checking out the hotspots and other information. So maybe if you don't have that information in an individual city, maybe first of all, see if whether or not they are a member of the library system. Library or Orange County Public Library System, because not all cities are. And then I know our city, we were putting it out on our social media all the time. But that is something, the library kind of is sort of a separate system, but it does regularly communicate that. So you may want to, get your hands on one of those flyers.
Elaine, Dave Totslop, can you send me a contact information that I could contact to get more information?
Sure. I'll send you the contact info for Julie Quillman. She's the librarian for the Orange County Public Libraries.
Great. Then the committee can follow up on that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. The Elder Abuse Subcommittee has not met yet, but I understand that Elizabeth is volunteered. You're looking a little dazed. Elizabeth, did you?
I remember.
Do you? Are you still volunteering to be on the committee, the subcommittee?
Okay, so go back. Tell me what. Which committee again? Do I volunteer for?
Elder Abuse Subcommittee. So just a committee that will kind of give us some focus on the topics that we're discussing that we're getting through our presentations, and maybe help us come forward with some recommendations for next year's workshop.
I think two other people also volunteered. Is that correct?
Yes, Carolyn. And Carol, I believe, right? Yeah, Carolyn and Carol. So that's all right. You had sent me an email and I hadn't responded. I just.
Okay, now I recall, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do you want to think about it some more?
Well, I'd like to talk with you about what it is we're expected to do.
Okay, so I think what I'll do is I'll just set up a separate little Zoom meeting for us, and we can talk about kind of what direction, what we might want to go in that, and see who's interested at the end of that, okay?
I would like that too, Evelyn, okay. So we could kind of have some direction on where we're going and what and the expectation is.
All right, so that'll be on me then to set up a meeting. All right, thank you. Legislative tracking. Our volunteer is John Pointer. Now I sent out the list that John had given us about the California Senior Legislature and the priority projects or priority legislation for next year. John, what do you have for us today?
Just a second, Evelyn.
Okay.
Wrong one.
It came and went.
Oh, here is the current list of legislative proposals that have been picked up by a legislator for the 2022 legislative session. I'm going to hold off on AP4 for just a minute because I was under the impression that was picked up, and I believe that's still being looked at by Assemblymember Gibson. So we're following up with that. As a reminder, the 18th, this Friday, is the last day for legislators to pick up author on one of our proposals. So first one, I've had a disclaimer. Number two, AP5, a local assembly member, many of you recognize Assemblymember Davies. AP12, Assemblymember Vopel is down in San Diego County. And I'm just going to scroll down to allow you to read that a little bit more. AP14, Hospice Standards, again, Assemblymember Vopel. Assemblymember Vopel is the vice chair of the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee. SP4, Home Care Aides. This is a training program scholarship. And this is Assemblymember Villapadua. And last but not least, SP14. The last time, so just as a reminder, this cost of living hasn't been raised in 40 years. Last year, and it's CSL's tried several times now, the allowance was requested to be raised to $80. We lowered that to 50. We're trying to find a floor. Well, what will you raise it to? So we came up with 50. We didn't think that was too arduous. So we'll see. If you are interested in the background of this, go to Ledge Info on whatever you use as a internet source, Google, you know, whatever. Type in Ledge Info, it'll come up. Click on Ledge Info in the upper right-hand corner. You can type in, I'll give you last year's bill as a reference. I think it was 848, AB 848, and Assemblymember Calderon was the author last year of that. And then you go to in the, what shall I call that? The scroll across the top, there is a tab there called analysis. Click on that, and every time that goes into committee, there's an analysis provided of that proposal, of that bill. So you can take a look at that, and you can see that basically it's tied to Medicare.
Okay.
And I think the state's concern is that if they raise it, they impact the Medicare distribution that they receive. But anyway, I'll bring it to the next meeting, Evelyn, and share it with people, and that they don't have the time to read it now, they can check it out later. So that's where we're at. I believe we're going to see two more proposals picked up. One involving AP3, skilled nursing home. This is an issue that I picked up on several years ago from Elaine about backup power at nursing facilities. So we've submitted this. We're hoping Assemblymember Rubio is going to pick it up. I'm sorry, Senator Rubio is going to pick it up. And this involves providing, again, backup generators in the event that there is a power failure. There is need to support at a minimum refrigeration for medicines that are needed there, and just for the creature comforts of the individuals at the skilled nursing home. And I believe we have the potential to see SP3, adult residential facilities, notification of closures picked up as well. So, as a further point of reference, Senior Assemblymember Mark Cox out of the Riverside County is working on a interesting legislative proposal for next year. It involves the growing incidence of grandparents attempting to gain custody of their grandchildren. So what is happening is that the child of the parents, who are the grandparents, is no longer able to take care of the children for whatever reason. Okay, there could be a litany of them. They passed away. They have a drug problem. They've lost their job and can't find employment. Their home's been foreclosed. You name it. They have their own medical issues. So Mark is estimating that one in five children in the Riverside school system are being taken care of by grandparents. So we'll come back and provide you with more information. There are, I believe, five CSL members that are in this situation right now. So it's something I think we're trying to see what kind of legislation we can introduce. In fact, one assembly member is also in this situation. So we're trying to see if we can address this in the future. The issue is that the paperwork to achieve custody in order for the children to be covered under their medical insurance, et cetera, is staggering. And these are people that you know, they're related to each other. So anyway, I will come back at the next meeting and I'll provide you with more information. I think it's an interesting topic. I think it's something that is statewide. And I think much like homelessness at one time, I don't think we have a real clue what the real numbers are out there. So we'll see. Evelyn, that's all I've got.
Okay. Thank
John,
you.
Evelyn. Could
John, would you take down the screen?
Yeah.
Share. so that
could I just follow up on that as a teacher? You see that quite a bit, and the problem is that the parents, that the grandchildren go to their grandparents, but they have little authority or little they have nothing. They live with the grandparents, but the grandparents aren't able to cover them with their insurance, able to get any of the benefits of having the guardianship of them. Right. And that's the issue, I think, isn't it? You know, they're not legal custody.
Right.
They don't have the legal custody, and to get it is very difficult.
And it's really a socioeconomic issue in many instances. I had no idea. You're much closer to it, Carol. I'm sitting here naively saying, what are you talking about?
I would wager in some areas it's probably more than one in five.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It just isn't, they just drop the kids off and here they, then the grandparents are responsible. And, it's a difficult situation. It is.
And then you're in a race to see if you're going to be able to live long enough to see them become of legal age, or are they in yet another predicament?
And if you don't have legal custody, there is no way you can get any financial assistance, And so the grandparents often have two or three children that they're raising again. It's a problem. It is a serious problem. I will tell you that.
Carol, just to give you an idea, there are law firms that exclusively focus on this. That's mm-hmm. how large the problem. They don't need to do anything else. They focus exclusively on this.
It's a big economic hit for grandparents.
Yes.
Tremendously.
Yes. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Elizabeth, you have your hand up.
Yes, I wanted to ask John about AP6, public transportation.
I haven't heard anything yet. We're still working on that, Elizabeth, and we've got our fingers crossed. But at this point, there was an issue raised about whether an issue of constitutionality. So we're attempting to find out what are you talking about? So we're working with Ledge Council on that. So we don't have an answer on that yet.
Thank you.
There is one other thing that I wanted to ask you about, John, and that is, I mentioned it the other day that they were talking on 60 Minutes about the problems with nursing staff, that it's not just that nurses are leaving the field because of the problems that we've had the last couple of years, but that we can't get enough new nurses into the system because we can't get enough teachers for the nursing programs. And that's always been a very, very tight kind of the number of spots that have been available have been always been very limited, and now it's become more so of a problem, and that impacts the seniors because as the population ages, there is a very real concern from even hospital administrators that there won't be nursing staff to be able to adequately manage the hospitals and emergency rooms. And so I'm wondering, is there anything that the legislature is looking at to streamline the process, to get more instructors to provide more openings, to provide, this is something that a friend of mine is a hospital administrator in England. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they've had to do is basically they get their nurses from other countries in Europe. They get a lot of Polish immigrants coming in that are nursing staff. And so how is the state looking at this huge potential issue?
What I can find out, Evelyn.
Okay, thank you. That would be great.
I saw that on 60 Minutes as well.
Yeah. Could I also comment on this? It used to be, and this is what my daughter did, the hospitals used to have programs for RNs to become an RN, and it would be a three-year program. You would have classes, and then you would go to the hospitals and have direct on-hands experiences in the hospitals. And now those have all closed down. And, you know, it was a great program. A lot of young women that I graduated with went into those programs and went into the hospitals, and they actually had the programs in the hospitals. Mercy in Des Moines had one, Methodist in Des Moines had one, and it was a three-year program. I don't know if they would even consider looking at anything. You'd have to coordinate with the hospitals, and, you know, it would have to be a whole program that would be set up, but it was really a good program.
Yeah,
I don't know why they quit.
Thanks, Carol. I'll add that to my list too. So I take a look and see what I find out.
Okay, thank you very much. I do think it's a huge issue that the state needs to be looking at. Okay, new membership. We don't have any new membership, so let's move on to announcements and roundtable discussion. Do we have any announcements today? Other than that, John is going to do a lot of research for us.
Well, he's the person that could get it done. That's for sure.
I have an announcement, Evelyn. Just if anyone's in the Laguna Niguel area on March 9th, we are having a Medicare fraud seminar, part of our Savvy Senior seminars at 5:30 at Sea Country Senior and Community Center. So the presenter is Miki Nakazawa, who is with the California, I don't remember the appropriate title, but many of you know her. She is with the Medicare agency. And there's a lot of new ways to scam seniors regarding their Medicare benefits. So she's going to be talking to us about that. So that's on Wednesday, March 9th, 5:30 in Laguna Niguel.
Any chance that that can be broadcast? That we can record it?
I don't think so. For this type of seminar, I will let you know if it is.
Okay.
But in the past, it has been a challenge to do that.
Okay, because that would be terrific. All right. Any other announcements? Then we are on public matters. Desiree, are there any members of the public that wish to speak?
Chair, we did not receive any public comment requests via email, and there is one member of the public present. If the member of the public present this morning would like to speak during public comment, please use the hand raise icon or press *9 and I will unmute you. And I do not see any hands raised, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, well then it's time for us to adjourn the meeting. Thank you so much. We will have, as we said earlier, our next special meeting will be March 11th at 9:20. It'll just take 10 minutes or less for us to review the action item on AB 361. And our speaker for next month is courtesy of Jim, and that will be on the Ombudsman Program and Carol Downey, hopefully. You have seen the notice that we would love for you to do the pledge for the meeting.
And Libby Anderson will be the speaker.
Oh, okay. You think it'll be Anderson? Okay.
Yes.
They great.
Acknowledged it.
Okay.
That was March. Say that again. March.
March 21st.
March 21st is our meeting?
Is our regular meeting.
Okay. That's the one. I'll put that on my phone. March 21st. Okay.
Right. And then show up on March 11th so that we can do our AB 360. I should have it memorized. Right?
11th.
AB 360.
11th and 21st are the 2 days in March, right? Yeah. 11th and the 21st. Okay.
Correct.
Let me add those.
Yeah, Elizabeth, have you memorized the subsection 54953E3 yet? Not yet? Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for coming to the meeting. I appreciate it. Have a great Valentine's Day. Bye-bye.